PGA Nation, welcome back to another episode of the PGA Draftcast. After perhaps the most controversial, most spectacular, most scandalous PGA Draft in PGA Draftcast history last week, we are here to take on the Valero Texas Open. Obviously, some notable absentees. Joel, RIP, has withdrawn with strep throat before the draft even starts. So that's very typical for Joel's team. Not typical that he has strep throat. And we obviously wish him all the best in his recovery. But the withdrawal is predictable. And the second absentee we obviously need to address is Sia Nishad. Now, if you didn't catch last week, Sia let all of the power go to his head. Rare appearance on the show. Captaining team audience. First, Mackenzie Hughes drafted by the audience. He vetoed that. The audience tried to take Taylor Moore. He vetoed that. They ended up with Kukuyama instead, using his power, just throwing his weight around. And audience, you'll be very disappointed to know that we've done the calculations. Thank you to Ivan, who I believe is in the chat, for running the numbers for us. Audience, I'll let you know. Had you had drafted Mackenzie Hughes and Spencer hadn't taken him, or you drafted Taylor Moore instead of Kurt Kitayama, you would have won the week. There, I said it. I'll let the barrage of comments come through. But the successful winner was Spence with his draft and his excellent selection of Mackenzie Hughes. Spence, how are you doing this week?
I want to thank the audience for the Mackenzie Hughes pick there. Like, they clearly were much more on it than myself for obviously Sia in this position. It's tough, David, because we didn't necessarily have Sia on this show quite frequently over the past handful of months. I don't know if Sia is coming back now.
He may be MIA, and I saw Zach said you can't spell Kitayama without spelling MIA, and I think that's a pretty fair reflection. And Byron, we saw you in the chat last week enjoying this and trying to help out team audience, trying to stop Sia in his tracks. What was your take from the audience perspective?
An absolute atrocity. I don't know how Sia, in his guilt conscience ridden mind, can get away with a situation like that. The fact that he holds himself up to a morally superior standard than us simpletons that aren't lawyers, I feel like that's even more egregious on his behalf. It just goes on and on. Like, just the fact that it was Sia Nishad that did that, out of all people. You know, the audience will never recover from that, but we're going to do it, or they're going to do their best, since I'll be potentially rocking, I don't know, I think my own squad this week. So we'll see what happens, man. But happy to be on the show. I'm drinking a Modelo. I might do a Mexican scandalous situation here once Sia's miss absence here.
Yeah, and we're delighted to have you here. Thank you for calling in. Very late notice, given the late illness withdrawal from Joel and the MIA from Sia, who's clearly hiding under his bed to avoid all of the flak from Hughesgate, Taylor Moore-gate. What a week it was. But we've got another exciting tournament this week and a really strong field, actually, in the Valero Texas Open this year. Obviously, the removal of the match play, we're seeing a lot of players add this to the schedule, and just 1 week until the Masters at Augusta National. So everyone's building up for that. The best course breakdown in the business always comes from our one and only TF Sports. Spence, what do you know about TPC San Antonio?
Yeah, so this is a venue that was designed in 2010 by Greg Norman. It's a lengthy par 72. I do think there's some features of this property that are going to mimic next week's venue. It does do it with its own flair for the dramatics, though. So you're going to have the dispersion of scoring increase around the green that produces 3.3% more impact on scoring than a typical stop on tour. You mix that factor with the 6% decrease in GIR percentage. That does help make this layout one of the more demanding major preps on the schedule. I do think, though, that's the very basic answer. You can tune into any show this week. You're going to hear those basic concepts over and over again. You need to hit greens and regulations. You have to be good around the green. When you don't do that, then obviously you don't get those production standpoints that you want. But my model looked into something, and I talked about this yesterday on the Roto Baller show with Byron when we did it together. One of the things I noticed is this sheer aggression. Players that could be aggressive on these longer par fives. There's a PGA Tour stat that you can run it a couple different ways. Aggression rate, aggression birdie or better percentage, par five aggression. I then took those totals and then tried to figure out who the best overall aggressors would be on those par five holes, because they demand risk if you want to get the most out of your rounds. But If we look historically at this venue of what has happened here, Corey Connors won twice by ranking in the top 10 of this field for overall aggression, par 5 aggression, and aggression rate. Jordan Spieth is going to be another name that carried out a very similar answer. He placed number 1 for birdie or better aggression. For me, when I built my model, and I'll let you guys add anything to the course if you want after this, but if you weren't a player that took this like prerequisite of trying to be a little bit more aggressive on these holes, I didn't think that you actually had the upside to win this contest. So I think you have to score on the par fives and be aggressive when you take that route. And then you also have 6 holes from 410 yards plus on these par fours that are going to be very challenging. They're the most difficult holes on the course for a reason. And while you would expect that the dispersion of shots to kind of go into the same bucket range because of that, you don't get that. Every single 25-yard bucket features over a 10% breakdown there. So it's kind of one of those venues where you have to be good across the bag with your irons. There's a lot of different routes that you can go to find success, but I do think aggression is the number one answer for me that I'm looking for this week that made my model different.
There you have it. Only thing I'll add is, as you mentioned, around the green's really important here. Actually, it ranks number 1 for strokes gained around the green as a predictive factor of future success. And we've surmised on that previously about why that might be, because the greens here are actually large. They're 6,400 square feet on average, which is above average for the size of the green fixes. But what you should bear in mind is that on these greens, they are multi-tiered. So they've either got 2 different steps or 3 different steps on the majority of the greens here. And what that really does is it condenses down the landing area that these players have when they're attacking those pins, as Spencer said, those aggressive kind of approach shots that you have going into these spots. And what that can mean is you're going to get some increased missed greens and you're going to need to scramble around here. There's heavy bunkering across all of the courses as well. So you're going to need to get up and down and be able to scramble to keep those scores going. And one other thing that I really noticed, which is really interesting, is that you see a huge uptick in approach shots under 125 yards and an uptick in approach over 250. So you need to either be really good with your long irons or your wedge play or both, and kind of nothing in the middle. So that's a really interesting quirk with this course of usually see one or the other, but the way that the course is laid out, 3 long par fives that Spence mentioned, you're going to need to be good with the wedge in hand and also with that 2, 3, 4 iron in your hand as well. Byron, did you pick up anything in the course before we bring the draft board up?
No, just outside the fact that the course history is a little more sticky than normal. I think that can be a benefit when you're looking to kind of find a sneaky guy that might not be playing well, but also when looking to, you know, I think Corey Connors is going to be a very fascinating discussion this week, you know, with his course history and lack of upside entering the week.
For sure. I mean, I'll add that as well. There's been a huge history of really bad putters doing well at TPC San Antonio. It's like key week for team no putt. So if there's any of those guys that you like, you just like, can't putt to save their life, but they're good on the ball striking, this could be the week to deploy them. So as I do that, I will bring up the draft board, and no surprise, as he always do, Spence won the week. You can blame Sia Nejad for that, team audience. I can hear the comments already, but Spence has awarded himself the first pick, and you are on the clock.
So I'm going to throw a curveball here. As you can see, this is not Sia's audience anymore. This is my audience. As my audience, we are one here. As appreciation for the Mackenzie Hughes pick, I will be putting not Sia's audience, my audience, number 1. Audience is on the clock. I will go 2nd. Byron will go 3rd. David, you're 4th. We will change this order up. Audience, get the picks in.
I love it.
Well, we've already had the first curveball. He's handing the pick to the audience. Clear suck-up move from Spence. He did the same thing last week in taking Mackenzie Hughes, standing in solidarity with the audience, obviously trying to butter them up in time for the first major with the Masters. So, audience, you're on the clock in there. Chuck your picks in. Just a reminder how this works. It's a snake draft, so to nominate a pick, you need to be on YouTube. So jump onto YouTube, watch us live on there. Chuck who you like in the comments. First player to get 2 nominations will be the one nominated. And I can see Stephen Spilardi and Jeff have both nominated Alex Noren. Byron, what's your take on Noren this week?
I don't know if I like Alex Noren.
It's an Aberg.
I think it's Oberg.
Oberg. Noren remains on the board. We've got Norengate to start off with the very first pick.
Yeah.
Can we just confirm, is it Obeer?
I only see one Noren from Splorati, yeah.
Ludwig.
So I like Byron, Ludwig. if that's your question there, Dave. He's interesting, man, because like you mentioned, you got to be a very good around the green player, and he's been struggling a little bit. He's like quite middle of the pack this year. Now, the difference about this, everyone's had this like opinion about Oberg, about that he's going to like take apart these courses like the Farmers and Whistling Straits and things like that. I think his best courses are these ones that are a little shorter that require just precision off the tee. He just seems to really thrive in these conditions. And I think at that kind of price at 10.5, I think you can probably go there. He's been pretty consistent and kind of moving in the right direction. From what I've gathered, there seems to be a slight wave advantage for PM AM going forward. It looks like there's a bit of weather showing up on Friday afternoon with calm conditions pretty much the first, you know, day and a half going on. So Oberg goes off in that rougher conditions. He'll be going off AM PM. So that's the only draw against him there, along with his short game. But the rest of the ball striking looking really good for him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the two spots where he's won over the last year, right? The RSM Classic and then on the DP World Tour, the Mega European Masters, both of these like really kind of quirky, shorter courses where driving accuracy plays a bigger role actually than driving distance. Some crossover here to El Chameleon, both of them designed by Greg Norman. So there's some crossover there, and that's another sort of driving accuracy course as well. So you can definitely draw some parallels. I guess my concern with Ludwig comes with the ownership. He looks very easily the highest owned, over 10,000. Spencer, what sort of ownership are you seeing on Ludwig, and does that factor into your decision around him this week?
Yeah, I mean, I see sub 22% right now, 21.75%. And I think you mentioned it, David, just talking about the profile for him. You would assume with his distance, he excels at these types of courses, but 96th in my model in strokes gained total on courses that are over 7,400 yards. Some of these club down spots seem to be better for him. And he does have negative trajectory in my model when you look at some of these short game metrics. So 132nd when looking at comp courses that I ran in my sheet in these like average to firm greens that have these slow to average speed there. So I don't know. There's a lot of ownership around him. I think that that's kind of the answer of most of these weeks where ownership obviously condenses in all the same spots over and over again. But there's definitely pivot points if you decide to go that route. And if you take Oberg, you're going to have to try to get unique in other spots. But I mean, we're talking about at the end of the day, a legitimate top three or four win equity candidate in this tournament. So while I may be picking holes in the profile there, we're still talking about an elite golfer that can go out and win this event.
For sure. Obviously a very, very talented golfer. Can't say too much negative about him. I will add that I put Ludwig up at 300-1 here back in 2022 when he was still an amateur. Obviously a couple years too early. You won't be getting him at 300-1 this week. But obviously his links to Texas is a positive for him as well. And with that, Spencer, you granted team not see is the first pick. Who would you like to take for your second pick? And did they steal Ludwig from you?
No, but I will say Darren in the chat has done his scouting on the show that Byron and I put together. I'm going to take Matthew Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick was a name for me that ranked second in my model when combining those harder par fours that I talked about and the long par five holes into one grade. That ranked behind only Rory McIlroy. It also placed him as one of only five golfers to rank within the top 20 of this field when I ran it individually for par three scoring, par four scoring, and par five scoring. A lot of that answer comes down just to the sheer aggression totals that Fitzpatrick had. Number one for me in projected aggression, we know he's added length this year off the tee. I think this is a really nice spot for Fitzpatrick, especially if the winds do pick up. I think some of his around the green acumen can really show here with those other intangibles that I talked about.
Very nice. Matty Fitzpatrick. Byron, what say you?
I was speaking about him earlier on my show, and it's like, what on earth are we going to get? You know, it's just like a It's a trailer of fireworks with Fitz. You're just driving along the road, and the next thing you could like land up selling them for profit, or you can just see your rear view mirror with one of the craziest fireworks displays known to man, because Fitz just completely implodes. And I think with him, it's going to be boom or bust. I was contemplating like a top 10 placement bet on him. So he's just everything or nothing. So I like Spencer's upside there. He's very affordable, especially if the wind blows. I think if this course plays to like minus 12, Fitz, he's right, you know, right there. So love, love, love that.
Yeah, definitely pops through really well in the round the green and the putting metrics. The other thing I'll add is he's really strong with both his wedges and his long irons, and kind of misses that 100 to 200 yard range on approach as well. So it kind of ticks that box of having that mixture of wedge in hand and long iron as well. Obviously saw that when he won the US Open playing a really long course and being able to play his long irons with aplomb. In terms of correlated courses, TPC Scottsdale never finished worse than 29th, and he's finished 10th there as well. So that's a nice crossover for Fitzpatrick there. So I think a very, very worthy pick, and love the ownership you get on him with Corey Connors and Jordan Spieth taking a lot of the ownership in that range right there. With that, Byron, you are on the clock. Who are you taking with your first pick?
I'm going to go against what I mentioned earlier about the weather advantage and just take this guy because of his value at $8,600. Brian Harman was striking his iron so freaking well entering the Valspar and then missed the cut. I'm not going to pretend like that, you know, isn't a big bump in his momentum entering this week, especially after missing the Houston as well, just taking the week off. But if we just ignore those two rounds of golf in on a course that had some really weird weather going on, Brian Harman had his best 2 weeks of approach like in his career and then missed the cut. So if that bounces back again this week, he's $8,600 in this field on a course that doesn't punish you for not having distance at all. In fact, in one of the years, there was like a negative correlation to driving distance. So the more distance you have, the worse you would have done. Statistically speaking, it doesn't obviously make any sense, but it was that like strong of a correlation to distance at this venue. So love his short game. His irons need to continue to cruise at this price in this field, at this course. I love all the Fitz. He's checking all the boxes, got lots of value. I've got tons of money still to play with. Let's party.
Yeah, I really love Brian Harman this week. He would have been one of my first two selections. So that's a straight steal from Model Maniac there. So we won't have
no idea he was your favorite, Dave.
So straight steal from him there. Look, I think he's way too cheap in that AK range, right? You've got Alex Noren and Adam Scott and Billy Horschel all kind of around him there, sucking up all the ownership. And Brian Harman, just for me, is a better golfer at the moment than all of those names. He should have been in the 9K range, playing really well other than the miscut last week. And I'd put that miscut as well, like with the Valspar, he was coming off the players. We had been heartbroken finishing second and just missing a putt, obviously, to make a playoff with Scottie Scheffler. It was a huge moment for him, and I can easily excuse missing one cut off the back of that and coming to a spot that I actually quite like him here this week. Spence, what say you on Brian Harman?
Yeah, I think the price is too cheap. Great TPC player historically, inside the top five of my model for projected strokes gain total. I think there's a lot to like about him entering this week, so I like the pick, Byron.
Thank you.
Very nice steal. As I said, we'll have to reconsider if we ever have Byron back on the show stealing from me. So I've got back-to-back picks here. I'm going to go way down the board. I'm going down to $6,200. So one of the golfers I think has the biggest misprice on this entire board this week. Nate Lashley is playing some excellent golf. 13th at the Players' Championship, finished 21st last week in Houston. Really pops for all of the eye metrics that I'm looking at. He has the combination of driving accuracy, approach, his around the greens excellent as well. He's killing it on approach these last 2 weeks. He looks in really good touch. I think this is a fabulous spot for him, and $6,200 for me is way too cheap. I was going to pair him with Brian Harman because I really like going that route, but I'll go to Jordan Spieth instead, $9,500. Look, I know that Jordan Spieth has lost on approach the last two tournaments, but he just has a knack for producing in Texas. We know how much this tournament means to him. I have question marks with a lot of these guys up the top of how much do they put emphasis on preparing and winning this week compared to preparing for the Masters. And that's always the conundrum that you face this week, is deciding which is which. With Jordan Spieth, I haven't got that question just because I know how much this tournament means to him. Spence, what say you on Spieth this week?
I really don't want to talk about Spieth. I'd rather talk about this Lashley pick.
Go to Lashley. Let's go.
Where did this come from that's the number one selection that we're going off the board here, where like my whole team is going to be predicated on how do I build around Nate Lashley?
Were you going to take Nate Lashley?
I mean, there was a real possibility that at number one, I was going to take Nate Lashley first. I figured he would fall back to me and I wouldn't be in this spot with a 5% golfer. So very disappointing. I think from a pure upside standpoint, he is one of the most egregiously mispriced golfers I've seen in a long time. That doesn't mean it doesn't come without risk. He's a boom or bust candidate. We keep talking about that with these players, but the ceiling potential, I talked about there being five golfers in this tournament that ranked in the top 20 from par three scoring, par four scoring, par five scoring. One is Oberg, two is Fitzpatrick, three would be Nate Lashley. There's two other names in that mix, but four of them were the favorites, and then there's 6,200 Nate Lashley.
Well, I love it. I'm glad that I got the steal in nice and early. I did think he was excellent value. And yeah, look, I'm surprised his ownership's as low as it is because he just absolutely pops in all of my models. He looks perfectly fit for this week and he's in great form. So 6,200, really nice dumpster dive that you can find to build your lineup around and free up a lot of salary cap there as well. Byron, any comment on Lashley and Spieth? And then you are on the clock.
I love both of them. I really do. I think Lashley, you know, is a great GPP option. I don't know if you want to like rely on him being that safe of a play, you know, between the four of us. I don't know, you know, how much his boom or bust potential will really come into, you know, fruition this week. But I think in GPPs is a great option. And then Spieth as well, GPP option, because he's got one of the smallest gaps between like his top five rate and his top 40 rate. It's just, he just doesn't care about doing anything half productive. It's always boom or bust with him. And Jordan Spieth in Texas is always live. So we'll enjoy the heartbreak and everything that comes along with the Jordan Spieth roster there, Dave. But, you know, in Texas with Spieth at this venue, you can't go wrong. But it is interesting to note that he does have a win, but the other two starts either side of that were 30th and 35th. You know, like nothing super, super high end, but that's the Spieth you get. So we'll wait and see there. I'll kind of roll through to mine and say that I'm going to go with Benny Hahn. I love him. I love the value at 9K flat. You know, I'm really liking my – if Sia was here and I looked like Joel, I think you would be undressing me right now with because my balance build is looking hot. And Brian Harman, Benny Hahn. I mean, Benny Hahn's got a 7th and a 6th finish at this venue. It's everything you could wish for. He's had 3 top 10s this year. Plays well on his club down courses. He's got tons of length off the tee. One of the best around the greens. Putting well now. That got the broomstick. Just everything about Benny Hahn is delightful. And he's very good from 250 and out. I mean, if you think about that 3-iron he hit into the 18th hole at Sony. And I think he hit a similar like 2-iron. Or he carries a 1-iron. Like a 1-iron is basically a credit card on the end of a lead pipe. You know, and it's just... he just sizzles that thing into par fives and he's got so much power. So give me Benny on $9,000. Let's party.
Yeah, love Benny on this week. He's on the right weather wave. Obviously, he's had a 6th and a 7th here before as well. So plenty of course history to go off. He's a better golfer than I think he ever has been this year. He's really at the top of this game. So I do like that play there. Spencer, what do you say on Benny on? And then you are on the clock.
Aggressive player inside of my model who scores on these par four holes. I think he's too cheap at the price. I think he's a borderline elite talent in this field. And I think there's a reason why people are backing him, including Byron there. So I like the pick. He was probably, for the record, going to be a player that I tried to fit into my build to begin with. So it's going to be a challenging tournament to kind of try to navigate through when you lose your best value at the bottom in Lashley and then you lose one of the value candidates in Ben on it does make it more difficult to proceed through it. But I'm gonna go with a golfer that's going to be very popular this week. I understand that. I do think that there's some natural leverage that I've already created with my build by just starting with Fitz over some of those other names in the $9,000 range, but I'm going to get popular down in this section. I'm going to take Alex Noren at 8,700. I guess you can just consider this me getting out of my system before the Masters. Like, Noren was the one name last year that just burned me in that tournament. And betting and DFS and everything there, but we're talking about a golfer, 12 consecutive made cuts, three top 20 finishes in a row. I think that tells a nice story for a golfer that's going to have adequate upside returns for this course. And there's also the statistical profile, which was the most intriguing thing. Fifth in my model for scrambling, eighth for aggression. He carried the second safest grade in the event because of his recent form. And then the one-off history, course history return that he had there. So you're going to need more than that safety level if you know, want to actually produce a big result in DFS or for betting. But I just think that safety answer allows me to feel comfortable taking a popular golfer here and thinking that I'm going in and can get different elsewhere.
Yeah, look, I've always got time in my life for Alex Noren. Obviously, his approach play looks really good of late. He looks like he's turned a corner the last three tournaments. My concern, you mentioned yourself, comes to the ownership. I have him around, floating around like 20% or so, quite easily the highest in the 8K range. So you do obviously have to be conscious of your build. But as you said, taking Matt Fitzpatrick, you've already created a little bit of leverage there, and no doubt you'll create some more further down the board, although that will not be with Nate Lashley. Audience, you're getting your picks in, I can see. Byron, quick comment on Alex Noren from you.
Yeah, like I was trying to say earlier before we went to Oberg, I'm a fan of Noren. I bet him last week as the top Nord. I don't know I'd ever say that on a podcast, but there we were. Just his lack of, you know, top five, top tens out of all these guys in this range. There's a handful of guys, you know, like you can look at Brian Harman right beneath him. He's finished inside the top five way more than Noren. Other options like, you know, Russell Henley are there. You know, they've had a bit more upside. Noren is very, very safe, which in this format, I'm all for. I'd probably lean into him like a Corey Connors, Alex Noren kind of Brian Harman cash start is just what dreams are made of. You know, I think that's something I'd look into. And that's kind of why I kind of went with Harman in my pick, because that's a bit more safe. Am I speaking about Noren? We're speaking about Noren, right?
Speaking about Noren, yeah. I agree with that. Yeah, I probably would go the Brian Harman route over Alex Noren, but obviously Spencer saw Noren being talked about a lot in the audience and decided to take Noren before they came in and snatched him on the turn. And their picks are in, which looks like Hideki Matsuyama and Keith Mitchell are the two selections. Spencer, deciding between these two, do you have a preference between Hideki Matsuyama or Keith Mitchell?
Let's see where the ownership's at. I guess my one concern, I mean, we're talking about two players here that there's a $3,000 difference. We have Hideki at about 20%, Keith Mitchell at 9%. I guess if directly comparing the two, I will take Keith Mitchell with the ownership discount that you get, but it's also a savvy way to build this to where you get the popular guy and you get the player that's going to be sub 10% there. So I think that the roster construction makes a lot of sense there from the audience.
Yeah, look, and Keith Mitchell obviously getting a bit of depressed ownership after a missed cut last week, but up until that point, he'd been really, really good. Maybe a bit of recovery from the Valspar when he had that kind of shocking final round and threw it away. I hoped he kind of would overcome that last week, and perhaps a savvy move by the audience here to take the ownership discount that you'd get. Quick one from you, if you'd like to comment on either Hideki Matsuyama or Keith Mitchell.
For me, the lack of upside is ridiculous there. You know, like both of these guys are averaging like 4.5% top five rates. Now, for Mitchell at that price, I'm fine with. But Hideki, now whether or not he's starting to become a better golfer, you know, than the one we've seen over the last 12 months, we've seen some movement in the right direction. But he's just so volatile, man. Like the guy is just a nonstop walking headache. You know, it's just, I don't know what to do with the dude. And I almost bet him for a top 20 today. And I was like, do you remember this is Hideki Matsuyama you're betting? He is most likely the week before the Masters going to do something stupid and piss us all off or win the tournament. You know, like it's just one of those two things. It's fascinating to see what he's up to. And I'm kind of just sitting on the sideline watching.
Well, there you have it, audience. Byron hates both of your picks officially on the record. He is completely turned. Now he's on the show, left team audience behind, and he's happy to give you just all of the slander. Spence, you are back on the clock with your third selection. Where are we looking?
I mean, Byron, I assume this is going to be a steal directly from you here, so I apologize for doing this before I do, but I'm going to take Martin Laird at 6,100. My roster construction kind of fell apart once David went Nate Lashley, so we can just blame him for why we're in this position. I know Laird's recent off the tee and approach numbers aren't going to look ideal if you're just diving in from a numerical perspective. He's doing everything with that portion of the game. That's not what you want to see. But there's a lot of numbers in my model that, yes, he shouldn't be gaining as many strokes as he is. But anytime that you have that positive nature around the green and putting, it's more predictable that you're going to go that route. It doesn't mean that he needs to gain 5+ strokes every single time that he does it. But I think we have a golfer here where the current form is going to look great. And if you want to discount that or discredit it because of that recent production that he's put together, that's fine. But now you also get a name here who's going to be sub 5%, who has some of the best course history that you can find if you date this back for the last 10 to 15 years. I know he missed the cut last year, but outside of that, it is top 30 performance after top 30 performance, with a few of those being very high-end returns from the mix. He has a great birdie or better aggression percentage. He's also inside of the top 25 over his last 24 rounds in good drive percentage. So I do think that in a lot of ways, he's trending in the right direction. From a statistical profile, I think most people aren't going to like it when they build a model. But, you know, I'm running this over a 2-year span, and he was inside of the top 25 for me for overall rank, which you don't very frequently get that from a $6,000 golfer. That's kind of that outlier answer there. I think there's great potential for him as a top 40 at plus 210 in the market. There's a lot of different ways to play Laird this week, but I do like him here at sub 5%.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, we do know that Spence, you like to run your model generally over like a longer time frame than most people and look at a lot of longer sort of history in terms of players. And looking at those profiles, it's actually really intriguing because, I mean, Martin Laird for the last kind of like 2-3 years was like one of the worst putters on the PGA Tour, like genuinely horrific. But it does look, looking at the data, like stroke gain putting has really improved to start this year. So maybe a gap in my knowledge. I don't know if he's added another putter to the bag or if he's been working with a new coach. Somebody could fill me in on that. But Byron, Spencer referenced that was a direct steal from you. Looking at your reaction, that seems quite obvious. So tell us how annoyed you are at having lost Martin Laird, and then you are on the clock.
You know, I'm a little annoyed, but more enjoyed, if that makes any sense, because the way Spencer kind of just broke down Martin Laird, I mean, he's looking even better to me than my thumbnail on my show tonight. He's surrounded by a bunch of like dimes. But Laird and Russell Henley have been going to the same cult convention, I'm telling you now. Because they went from these boring ball striking guys that couldn't reach 290 plus off the tee to, all right, let's go to the short game convention, Russ, and let's go and become some of the best putters and around the green players in the field. And Martin Laird is $6,100, and he's won this tournament and another comp course, the Shriners. So I've got an outright on Martin Laird. I've got an 11-1 top 10 on him. I went the opposite direction because I've got way too much exposure in the top 40 market. I went top 10 for him. You know, if he's going to play nicely and with that short game, that's volatility that I'm kind of embracing in DFS because you can gain tons and tons of strokes just randomly with the short game that he's kind of showing right now. And he's obviously bringing it to a course that he's played well at in the past when he never had those tools. So now he's got that short game. I'm thrilled to see what Martin Laird can get up to at $6,200.
I love it. Yeah. Well, nice work, Spencer. Stealing, obviously. Directly from Byron, definitely worth a look at. Laird and Lashley down in that lower 6K range both look like great value. Byron, who are you looking with for your third pick?
I'm going to go cash play Conundrum City over here and go with Christian Bezuidenhout at $7,900. My squad is rock solid outside of Benny Ahn. I feel like they would be any sort of cash play core. I just love what Bezzy's been up to with the iron play. He refuses to hit the golf ball far. But I know Spence and I spoke about this yesterday, and it's an interesting situation because Bezzy's severe lack of distance is a massive problem at most golf courses. I don't know how much it's going to bother him here. Now, I don't know how much aggression he's going to show on those holes that Spence has brought up a few times, but at least on the other 12, his passive nature will be adopted by the rest of the field, I would imagine, on those holes too. So he kind of, the pack comes back to him. He doesn't quite catch up to the pack, but I love Bezzi's approach play. I mean, Jesus, the last time I was on the show, Christian Bezzadenhut probably wasn't inside the top 100 of approach play. And now in fields with Scotty Scheffler, Colin Morikawa, the likes, he's inside the top 10 in recent ball striking. So it's just really cool to see what he's up to. He can putt well. I feel like South Africans like the Texas courses a little bit more too, for some weird reason. I think the bent grasses and things like that kind of help. But love Bezzi, love his price. Let's party. $8,100 left to kind of just keep playing that balance build and making Sia just, you know, ultra excited on his couch wherever he's watching from.
Yeah, well, you know that I'm always a Christian Bezadenhout truther, and that's actually the second steer from Byron. I would have taken CBS with one of my next two picks, so I'm now scrambling to remake my roster and again reconsidering my choice to invite Byron onto the show this evening. Spencer, while I look at the board and try and find someone else to replace CBS with, what are your thoughts on Bezadenhout? How's he ranked for you?
I think he's too cheap. Great safety numbers in my model. Byron kind of touched on that, inside of the top 10 for me in safety. It's also inside of the top 10 in that weighted proximity that Byron talked about. I guess my only concern would be how aggressive is he going to get? And I guess it's that double-edged sword sort of an output that you get, because he will be able to save par on some of those more difficult par fours. If he can birdie the par fives and add a little bit of aggression and distance, the upside all of a sudden rises there. So if he puts that potential together, I do think he's too cheap at the price. Like, to me, and I don't think there's a massive difference between Bezadenhout, Harmon, Scott. I like Noren a little bit more personally, but I don't even think it's that different from Noren. Like, any of those guys in my head-to-head model are minus 130 one way or another. And Bezadenhout is that one name of the mix that's not in the $8,000 section that I talked about. So that typically for me derives value when that answer ends up coming out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I obviously like the pick because I was going to take him. So well done, Byron, for the second steal of the show. First Harmon and now Christian Bezadenhout.
Really, I had no idea he was your guy, Dave. I'm so sorry.
The dripping with sarcasm says otherwise. And so I will go. I was going to take Harrison English here anyway. I really like him this week. Look, Harris English has been playing just some fantastic golf lately, just putting in top 20 finishes left, right, and center. The consistency really looks like is there. I like the safety that I'm getting with him and turning up to a really good spot for him in terms of the wedge metrics as well as the longer iron approach play. Obviously, we see that at the US Open with his performances, how he can play with the long irons. I'm going to pair him with previous darling of DFS that's kind of fallen off everyone's radar. I'll take Russell Henley. He looks to be low owned this week, and I guess a lot of that comes off the miscut of the Players when I really, like, he was really popular, and missing the cut has obviously burned a few people, but I'm happy to take him here. Look, he's got great record at the comp courses. He's only played here twice, so that is a little bit of a concern that he hasn't had the same sort of course history as some of these other names, but you are getting a big discount in ownership. And look, he rates in the top 20 as of Data Golf's rankings in the world at the moment, so you're getting a real discount at 8,200 compared to some of the other names around him. Spence, were English and Henley within your player pool this week?
I kind of knew, just with the way that you the money you had left, David, I should say, if I took Martin Laird, I was probably going to lose out on Harris English. And that was one of those tough decisions to where I was trying to figure out, like, clearly I would rather have Harris English if we're comparing player to player. But roster construction of how I was trying to build this kind of put me in this position where I was like, well, maybe there's a potential chance that David doesn't and he'll fall back to me. But English is not a golfer that usually grades well for me. Very infrequent that he jumps into the top 10 of any model that I have. Inside of the top 10 for me this week for both overall rank and upside. So I think he's a great value pick at 8,300.
Yeah, I love it. Byron, what's your thoughts on English and Henley? And then after that, you are on the clock.
I am a fan of English, but again, it's so weird watching him play because he's always around the top of the board for the majority of the week, and then he falls backwards, or he's not at the top of the board for the majority of the week, and then he comes flying up the leaderboard. You know, like, how his results unfold requires a certain like narrative, you know, for the week, which, you know, like game script, I would say, because he's just one of these guys that just doesn't quite get it together when he really, really needs to under pressure. But from a DFS perspective, I feel like he's completely fine. You know, at $8,300, he's very cheap. Russell Henley, he's GPP central now. You know, with that short game profile he's possessing, I think his volatility, his upside is definitely increased. But the floor is now lower than it's ever been for Russell Henley without that ball striking, because he's always relied on that to kind of keep him in that top 40 range, make those cuts. Now it's not there anymore, and the short game is what's kind of keeping the boat afloat, and we'll have to wait and see what he gets up to this week. But I don't mind the price tag whatsoever. We'll see what he can do. Henley's not too shabby. I'll dive back to the top of the board here and go with a guy by the name of Billy Horschel. I don't think he's been taken yet, and he has not. That's good, because that would have been awkward as balls. But at $8,900, I'm going to get some salary savings there too for someone that I was taking a look. I bet him at 200-1 to win the Cognizant Classic, and now he's like 30-1 to win this week, which is like three or four starts later. So he's moving in the right direction. His ball striking, his iron play, his putting, his chipping, you know, just everything about Billy Horschel suits these kind of venues where he needs to keep his ball in play, avoid the big numbers, grind it out. You know, if this number of the winning score gets to about minus 12, that's right down Billy Horschel's avenue. I love where he can go there, moving in the right direction, playing some good golf. Let's see what Billy Horschel can do. Vince?
I mean, for me, Billy Horschel, and I'll talk about it with my player next that I'm going to take, and I guess that's a good segue into the discussion I'm going to have. He's one of the biggest climbers in my model when you take either strokes gain total, strokes gain tee to green, strokes gain off the tee, strokes gain approach, any of those key metrics, and that even works for around the green and putting, where, I mean, he's 40, 50, 60 spots better over what my baseline numbers would be in this recent short-term run. Great numbers with some of the aggression totals. Yeah. Great putter on this tournament. I don't know if I'm going to necessarily get to him, but I think there's a lot to like about the profile, and the ownership is actually less than I thought it was going to be. When this initially got put together, I just saw Horschel's name for outright betting over and over and over again. I thought there was a chance that Horschel might creep into this like 20% sort of a total, and I see him at 13% right now, and that kind of moves me into my next pick, where I'm going to be taking what I kind of deem to be a similar golfer here, just for $1,500 less, to where I talked about Horschel being 50, 60 spots better in every single metric that I'm looking at. Maverick McNealy is giving the same exact profile there. Like the tee to green stuff, 77 spots better. The off the tee numbers, 108 spots better. He's really returned from injury in a big way at this point. And from a safety perspective, he's inside of the top 15 of my model. I only have him at 10% ownership right now. I think the price tag is too cheap for a golfer that's top 15 overall rank for me too. Does have some negative trajectory in my sheet for upside, but top 35 here the one time he's played it, and a handful of made cuts since returning from injury.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry if I froze there for a little bit. I think my connection's been a little bit dodgy today for some reason. Look, I love what Billy Horschel's been doing. He's in my bad books at the moment because he's had three finishes of 12th or better in the last four tournaments, and the one tournament where I put him up as a selection was the Players' Championship where he missed the cut. So go figure, that's what ended up happening. Maverick McNealy, look, Mav's playing some really good golf lately. We know that he possesses heaps of upside. Obviously, he stepped away from the game for a little bit and is now back. He looks to be in decent form. So really do like the pick there. He looks like he's rounding into a decent bit of form. Remind the audience that you are on the clock there as well. Byron, Mav McNealy, what say you?
Yeah, again, he's got that same situation where he's just got that incredible short game, man. And I think that's where, well, I think Spence is leaning into that. And the fact that he's $7,400, I don't think that makes tons of sense at this golf course, especially with the emphasis around the green. He's one of the best around the green players. He's such a good short game specialist, especially on those windy days. We're going to see Mav do his thing. Too cheap, too good of recent form. You know, I don't think people have caught up to what he's been up to. I'm a big fan of him this week, despite him going off, you know, in the bad wave, so to speak.
Yeah, and look, the other thing I'll throw out there as well, Matt McNeely has a strong connection to Las Vegas, obviously, which Spence will be well aware of, probably influenced his decision at least 80%, the fact that he's got connections to his hometown of Las Vegas. But obviously, there's a lot of comps with this course in TPC Summerlin. There's a lot of crossover on the two leaderboards, and the fact that Matt McNeely kind of regularly plays out of that golf course, loves his desert golf. I do really like that pick there. Looks like the audience has come in there with Corey Connors, obviously the past champion last year. He's been hitting the ball really well. Team No Putt's been pretty successful at this course in the past as well. Still need one more from the audience if you guys can confirm last pick. But Byron, I'll go to you for your thoughts on Corey Connors there.
Yeah, I think we mentioned this earlier about Connors being a cash game situation. Me and Spencer spoke about this yesterday. His ownership is going to be too high for his lack of upside that he's entering the week based purely off of the course history. I understand, you know, there's all of that going on. It's weird, man. He's playing fine. I just don't know. It's what are you guys seeing him as owned right now? Because I think that's one of the biggest questions going to Corey is the fact that he could potentially come in as the highest owned guy because he's $9,700, $9,400.
Yeah, I have him second right now at just under 21%. Oberg is the most popular play. So, I mean, that Oberg Connors start from a large field GPP contest worries me, specifically when you add a deck. I guess the thing that makes that lineup different is if you look at it right now, they have less than $6,000 available. So I think by just going top end, top end, top end with it, most people aren't going to put themselves in the range where they have two sub $6,000 golfers. So maybe just naturally you become different going that route from the pure aggression with that. But that would be my only note. I agree with Byron. I don't know if the upside is exactly where I would want it to be, but it's hard for me to like from a cash game build. I think he's one of the best players on the board, and that's for obvious reasons there.
Yeah, and I mean, look, touching on the salary question, the audience, without their captain, their former captain, he might have been dismissed as captain after last week, seeing Najad. They've now tried to take another golfer, Lucas Glover, there, who would have actually put them over the salary cap and meant that they couldn't complete the team. So instead, they are going to go with Maddie Schmid in his place of Lucas Glover. Guys, what do you say you and Manny Schmidt? Look, he's been playing some great golf. I just don't know if this is necessarily the best course for him. But Byron, I'll go to you, and then after that, I'll come back to Spence.
I don't know, man. I haven't done enough. I honestly have no take on Manny Schmidt. He's one of the guys in my model that I come out as Mateus, and I just refuse to change his name. And I just pretend like he doesn't exist in the world because it's just too much of a headache for me. So that's my take. I understand he's been playing better. I don't know where to go with him. I mean, I've got a nothing take on him.
Yeah, look, he has been playing better. I probably prefer him at a slightly longer course where he can really lean into his driving distance. He is very long off the tee, typically plays well on longer courses. This is kind of just like average run-of-the-mill length. And the other thing to bear in mind with Texas, right, like the courses do get so dry that you do get a lot of carry after the distance as well. So it's a lot of distance after the carry. So you do get a lot of run out, and that can actually take driving distance out a little bit here as a predictive factor. Spence, we'll go to you. Any take on Maddie Schmid, and then you are on the clock with your second last pick.
I worry a little bit about the around the green game also on top of all those factors. I do think, though, at 6,300, it's hard to say anything negative about him with what we've seen from the recent run. Like four top 26 finishes in a row is a very noteworthy answer when we're trying to compare him to other names down in this section to where, like, yeah, I would rather move up and take an Adam Shank at 6,900. But I think he's every bit in that mix with almost any of those other guys that we've talked about that are not the Layards or the Lashleys of the world. So I don't have massive gripes with it. Maybe not the very first name that I'm clicking on, but I understand the reasoning behind it. I am going to go, and I was trying to figure out if there was somebody very deep down there, because there was a couple ways for me to build this, and I'll just name some names here. If English was an available option, I think Fleetwood and English and leaving a bunch of money on the table would have been a nice route to go. I have a sickness, and my sickness, if it allows me to put Norrin and Rory into a lineup together, I'm usually all in for that mentality. I would like to put Rory in. I mean, that leaves me with, what does that leave me with before I exclude this? 5,800. I could go with Rory and a Sam Stevens. I mean, I think that that's a potential route. I mean, the problem with what I just said there, I mean, can anybody afford Rory? I guess you could, David.
I mean, we can both afford Sam Stevens. I mean, I'll give you that. But I kind of like to hear about who you like in the 5K range, if that's the route you want to take.
I mean, it would probably be like a Stevens, Harry Hall, if we want to talk about another Las Vegas connection there with Harry Hall, that I think you can open up some salary that route with it. I'm gonna deviate away from that strategy. Just because I think once you give names out, it makes it like if all of a sudden I take Sam Stevens, because that's the name I have to go in for whatever reason, David, you try to, I don't even know if it would be sabotage your lineup and leave yourself way at the bottom. It would put me in this spot to where there's really nobody that I want to go to and I'd be making a worse lineup with it. So I'm going to go with the second tier name. It's just sometimes in poker, if like you reveal your hand to everybody, even if you have pocket aces, you might be better off just folding in this spot because you're not going to win unless you just want to shove all in. And I don't have the ability to close out action here because any of those names come into play. But I'll go with Max Homa. I think Homa is a name for me that increased in my model for expected weighted proximity and a massive one at that. He's 15th overall in expected proximity for this course, 66th in his baseline projection. One of the big upside climbers for me in my model. I know we haven't necessarily gotten the results that we wanted from him this year. He's been all over the place, but not going to be the upside numbers that Rory possesses for me. But Homa was the third favorite in upside in my model when running this purely for win equity.
Yeah, and you're getting a really good discount at the moment on Max Homa for ownership compared to all of those names around him. He does look pretty low owned. He's been doing really well on approach lately. The results may be like a 64th of the players you would have hoped are a little bit better. So that's probably a resulting decrease in his ownership there. But look, I think he's a really nice contrarian spot. I would have liked to have seen you go Sam Stevens, so I could have tried to snipe Rory McIlroy, because that would have been just an entertaining way to round out the show. But do like the Max Homa play there. Byron, what say you on Max Homa? And then you are on the clock after that.
Love Max Homa. I think the ability for him to duck, take the golf course and the field apart with his putter, he can be the best putter in the field any given week. And when his putter fires, the rest of his game kind of tends to toe the line, hopefully. And I think, you know, he's provides you quite a lot of safety. He's actually, despite playing as bad as he has, he's been really consistent. You know, he's been like one of the better top 20 scorers in this field. And it's rather impressive to see him kind of just get it done regardless of his like lack of it right now. His stuff is missing. But like Spence said, like the putting is just coming back right now. And when that starts rolling, the rest of Max Homa is going to be cooking. I'm a big, big fan of that this week for him. I'm going to go with a guy that's $7,800. He's one of the most accurate drivers in the field. He's a very good long iron player, very boring golfer, starting to find himself in a bit of form, kind of trending in the right direction since getting back from Mexico. It's going to be Aaron Rye. And he has played nicely in the past, finished 28th, 29th, and then he had a 7th in Houston. I would say Houston is a very similar kind of a venue to what we're going to expect this week from a scoring perspective, you know, having to grind it out. And I feel like that's what Rye's specialty is. The guy's hands never get cold and they never get wet. He's rocking the gloves like a badass PGA Michael Jackson. Give me Aaron Rye. He's one of the most underrated iron players out of the rough as well. But which is quite ironic because he's one of the most accurate drivers of the golf ball. So it kind of is interesting to kind of see that correlation there. Almost makes you wonder that he's missing it in the right spots all the time to have those good shots out the rough. But either way, he's very good at both of those things, which are very important this week. And we'll see what he can get up to, man. $7,800. I'm not expecting the world from him, but he's going to be one of those safe guys that hopefully gets me inside the top 35 and keeps his balance build very balanced at $7,800.
For sure. And look, I mean, if there's ever a spot to play Team No Putt, as I've mentioned, week. the past winners have been really poor putters. That's kind of like Rye's MO. See me?
Yeah, not really, no.
I'm back.
I mean, I think Sia's hijacked the show and has like cut into the waves that are being sent out. I caught about every fourth word there. Usually if I could catch every other word, I could probably make out what was being said, but one out of every four words is a little bit too far of a stretch.
Heard something about Aaron Rye. That's his MO. I feel like that's, you know,
his MO has been on Team No Putt, and this is kind of Team No Putt week. So I do like that correlation. Obviously, the driving accuracy, and I agree, his approach is very, very underrated. He's an excellent approach player. Seventh last week at Houston Open. Played here twice, finished 28th, 29th. So really good course history as well. Spence, do you have any comment on Aaron Rye?
I'm going to save my take until my pick because I don't want to get myself sniped by what I'm going to say here. But let's save the Rye discussion when it moves back to me. But I do think, in theory, it's a good pick.
I love it. Well, I was very pleased to see that the audience sniped themselves and didn't leave themselves enough salary cap, because I was going to take Lucas Glover at 7,300. So I will do here. As I said, if you're ever looking for a player who's good on approach, good on ball striking, good on driving accuracy and can't putt, Lucas Glover is like pretty much the answer. That's kind of the recipe here this week, and love him at 7,300. I think he's great value. Would have liked to have rounded him out with some other names up here, but I'll take Colin Morikawa. Colin Morikawa is good at golf, you know, and he's the lowest owned of every golfer other than Corey Connors. Everyone seems to be out on Colin Morikawa at the moment. Obviously an elite ball striker. Approach play has been a really good predictor of success at TPC San Antonio. So happy to take him here and round up the lineup with a little bit of a contrarian finish there. Spence, what do you say on Lucas Glover and Colin Morikawa?
I think you said it best with Morikawa. Like, there's probably other names if you had a full onslaught of options available to you that you would have rather have gone to. I do think from an upside and game theory perspective, Morikawa carries a lot of those upside marks that you would want to see. Here's the one negative answer that I just want to give out on this show. I'm not even saying this is a reason not to take him. Inside of my model, and this is from somebody who runs things from an extended period of time, so you still have a lot of last year's totals thrown into the mix here. Morikawa from outside of 200 yards in weighted proximity from outside of 200 yards this season compared to the field, 47th. There's a lot of no-name players in this field for him to be 47th. If you look just in the year 2023 and compare that to the entire PGA Tour, he was a top 40 golfer. So he is worse in this field this season than he was last year from that range against the entire PGA Tour. I think that is why we have gotten this downturn from him. It doesn't mean that he can't turn it around. I think he is one of those intriguing names at the right ownership percentage where you can take a chance, and he's going to create leverage with the potential opportunity to really pop one of these lineups if you can put the pieces together. But there's a reason why he's not getting owned, and it's that questionable long iron proximity that he's putting up right now.
Yeah. While Colin lies on the floor there, I'll pile in on him and kick him in the teeth as well, because he's not an elite iron play anymore, Dave. He was, you know, like he's still Colin Morikawa, but you're 12th in recent strokes gained ball striking in this field, you know, the Texas Open. And then when, like Spencer's saying, in general, like his long-term ball striking, what made him different to the rest of the world, not the Texas Open, was the fact that he could absolutely just outshine anyone from any distance. And he's no longer in that realm. It's interesting, you know, like in a world that we've seen guys find success in ball striking with distance added and things like that. Maybe Colin is looking for distance in pursuit of it right now or something, and it's not quite gelling with his swing, but he's not playing well. He's not doing his thing. So it's tricky.
Yeah, look, as I said, I probably would have rather have gone different routes with the end of the build. That would have been possible if Byron hadn't stolen Brian Harman and Christian Bezuidenhout. I'll throw those two names and put the jinx on Byron there once again. But yeah, look, I do think that Colin Morikawa has upside. I take the point about the over 200 yards range. Hopefully on a course like this where he lacks a little bit of distance, on those longer par fives, he actually ends up laying up and trying to go in with a wedge instead. And he can actually lean into that on those key scoring holes. And look, if he's going to be extremely low owned, I think that he's a viable option. If Colin Morikawa came out and won a golf tournament, no one's really going to be surprised, because it's Colin Morikawa and he is a decent golfer. So he is obviously comes with risk, as both Byron and Spencer have mentioned there. Byron, how are you going to round out your lineup?
I'm going to make it easy peasy. Austin Eckroat, he's one of the highest ranked guys I have in my model. $7,200. I'm going to leave $600. I went with a balanced build and then left $600 on the table, because I will take Austin Eckroat over the majority of the guys that I have left. That middle of the 7K range all goes off in that bad wave. I didn't have, you know, any of the options above that. So I kind of got found in a spot of bother there, but I will gladly leave that $600 knowing that he's going to be playing great. I mean, he's playing so good right now, and the ball striking is just through the roof. So Austin Eckroat at $7,200. I was thinking about some Akshay Bhatia, you know, but he's not nearly as reliable as Austin Eckroat, which is kind of weird considering they're $500 cheaper. But Austin in safe play cash game situations, and then I'll take Akshay maybe in a GPP instance. You know, his upside is kind of weird. So yeah.
Yeah, look, I agree. Eckroat's been really crushing it on approach. He's been a big gainer on approach the last four tournaments in a row, gaining over four strokes on approach every single tournament. Obviously won at the Cognizant Classic as well, got that monkey off his back and got his victory in nice and early in his PGA Tour career, which is always promising. Like the driving accuracy metrics that you get from Eckroat at this spot as well. My only comment would be the around the green game that he has lost on around the green for his last three tournaments, and that's really good predictor of success of this course. And I actually like Brendan Todd right there as a pivot spot just below Austin Eckroat. He's kind of half the ownership, got really good course history, and obviously crushes it around the greens and putting. But Spence, what say you on Austin Eckroat, and maybe a little comment on Austin Eckroat versus Brendan Todd, where you would go in DFS games?
I like your call of Todd at half the ownership. Todd is higher in my model in all three ways that I ran it. I do think Eckroat's fine, and it's one of those decisions down here in the 7,000s to where, you know, I saved the Aaron Rye discussion because, like, Byron left 600 on the table. I'm probably going to leave even more than that. It's just the way that this board ended up working itself out. If you want to start at the top of options that I was considering, Rye would have been one of them. I was kind of hoping that Byron was going to go Eric Cole to just completely alleviate my decision here and, like, let me be free of my conscience of, like, what I'm going to go with the route here. But I think Rye, Cole, Bo Hostler, Erik van Rooyen, Nikolai Højgaard, if you're going to try to get super creative with some leverage there, Brendan Todd, if you want to leave a lot of money on the mix down at the very bottom. So to me, those were all the options. I'm going to go with the name that I used to write this article. One of the first times I wrote about TPC Summerlin, I talked about this player in, it would be 2018 or 2019, I guess. Could be 2020. But I talked about how his first PGA Tour win is going to come at TPC Summerlin. And it didn't end up happening there. We have talked about how it's a comp course here. It's a golfer that played his golf in college at Texas. I think he was trending at many portions of this year until we saw this little hiccup that he had put himself on. But I really think Bo Hostler for this specific sort of a venue has a lot of upside here at sub 10%. And it's kind of the way for me that, like, the way that I look at my lineup now, it's a little bit more balanced than I was anticipating taking with it. I know I have Laird at the bottom, but, like, my initial strategy was to start with Rory, full disclosure. Like, I was going to go Rory, Lashley, Laird, and just fire things in the middle there with it. But that route didn't end up taking, like, the way that I wanted to. So I'll close this with Hostler. I think Hostler has legitimate win equity at this tournament.
Yeah, and Bo Hostler and win equity, you usually don't hear those two things within the same sentence. But look, I named Bo Hostler as my potential breakout candidate for 2024, and that was based on what we saw him do at the second half of 2023, particularly on approach. It kind of looked like a mini Wyndham Clark in terms of his profile. Lots of driving distance and the improved approach, and he is a very, very good putter. obviously like the links to Texas here as well. He's a former Texas Longhorn, so that's really quite savvy there, rounding out the lineup for Spence and leaving plenty of money on the table is instantly going to make you different. Audience, your final pick is due, so get him in. And Byron, what say you on Bo Hosler?
Yeah, I think Bo is the time. I think, you know, like a chalky Bo is never a good Bo because he can always break your heart. But in Texas, man, you got to play this guy. It's weird. I think he lost to Ian Poulter at this tournament. Is that, I think the closest he's come to winning an event was at this event to Poulter, and has never been the same. He's an extremely talented golfer. I love the price. You know, $7,500 saves you some money. Especially in Texas, you know, like there's just certain guys that you play in Texas, and he is one of them.
For sure. And the only thing I'd say about Hosler is that he's typically lost on approach here. Like even when he finished fourth back in 2022, he gained like a ton of strokes putting. I mean, it's kind of like is Hosler's MO, and I think that he's improved as an approach player since then, but that is just something to be conscious of. The audience have got their final pick in, rounding out the draft cast. Grayson Murray is the play. Spencer, any comment on Grayson Murray and his chances this week?
With the way that the audience positioned their lineup here, I actually think he may have been the best option that they could have taken. I mean, make of that what you will. He's just inside of the top 60 for me. So I think based off of where the audience was, I like the pick.
Yeah, look, I think Alex Smalley was potentially in play there as well within that range. He's been playing a lot better. I think that he's got potential upside. He's kind of a darling of the show as well. Byron, any comment of Grayson Murray, and then we will jump out to our first round leader bets.
I see it. I understand why they like him. You know, the around the green. He's very good around the green. There's other areas of, I mean, he's very good off the tee when it comes to distance and hitting it long. Like I said, there was a year where there was negative correlation off distance. You know, like, so that's, he's got one big strength that really translates well here. And his other big strength is dialed back exceptionally, you know, and I think whatever, you know, $5,500, I'm whatever with it.
I mean, I definitely think there's worse spots that you can look within that range. Yeah. He's gained on an approach his last two starts, and he also has played here only once and he finished 16th. Mm-hmm. So obviously he found some sort of liking to the course there. Spence, what were you going to say there?
No, all I was going to add to that is you really just in this range need to find something that you can hold on to for a reason why a player can find success. And I think the back-to-back made cuts for him and then that 16th place finish that you just talked about, those are all a lot of the reasons why. And the distance that he brings to the table and really his overall birdie or better percentage this season, like there is a recipe of how he can make this work. He's a name that can miss the cut and he can miss it in horrendous fashion. But I think when you're looking for pure potential to move up the leaderboard, look, whatever you think of Grayson Murray, he's a PGA Tour winner this season. Like, I understand that he doesn't always put the metrics together the way that you would want, but even in a lot of his Korn Ferry starts, he was working himself up the leaderboard or missing the cut. Like, he's this player that either it works or it doesn't work. So you have to know what you're getting with him when you take him. But I do think the ceiling is a little bit higher than a lot of these other names.
Yeah, I mean, look, and beyond just the PGA Tour win, he won twice on the Korn Ferry Tour, so he's had three wins in the last 12 months. So not bad from the audience there at all to round out the lineup, and they've got tons of value at the top of the board. So as we have our first round leader bets, I can see your faces now, so that's helpful. Spence, we'll lead out with you with your first round leaders for the Valero Texas Open.
I just have one right now to talk about. If I have any more, I will add them. But Bo Hosler, 55-1.
Love that.
Easy. Byron.
Love that bet. I'm going to go with Jordan Spieth, 40-1. And I'm going to go with Benny Ahn, 50-1.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to follow Spencer on Bo Hosler. In overseas markets, you can get him at 66-1 in places. I think that's way too long, especially given his price in the win markets. Gets a morning tea time. Obviously, he's got the Texas connection as well. And I kind of trust Bo Hosler over one round. a lot more than the full length of the tournament. I've actually got six this week, five additional into Bo Hosler, but they're all priced 50 to 1 or longer. So I'll lead out with Brian Harman at 50 to 1 and Harris English at 50 to 1. You're getting a big inflated number on them being first round leader versus winning the tournament. So I'm really liking the inflated odds that you're getting on a first round leader. They're getting a morning tea time as well. Andrew Putnam, we didn't speak about him on the show, but you can get him at 80 to 1. Really accurate driver of the golf ball. He's been popping on approach. Great putter as well. Can definitely spike for one round for you. 100 to 1, Taylor Pendrith. Great links to Texas. He played really well here on the Korn Ferry Tour as well, and you're getting a triple figure number. He's looked a bit better of late as well. So, really. Like the number there and round. There you go. Am I back?
I love the picks, Dave. I didn't hear one of them, but I love the picks. Sign off on everything.
Rattle them off if you can, dude.
Did they all drop out? Did you get none of them?
I heard the first two, I think, and then everything faded after that.
It's unbelievable. I can't believe that. Well, I just produced some of the best content for the PGA Draftcast and I heard it because I completely froze. But Brian Harman, Harris English, 50s for both of them, getting a very inflated first round leader price compared to their win odds. Bo Hosler, as I mentioned, 66 to 1. Andrew Putnam, 80 to 1. Very accurate driver of the golf ball. Great putter. Really popping on approach lately as well. Taylor Pendrith, 100 to 1. You obviously a great history here on the Korn Ferry Tour, getting triple figure odds, and he's looked better this year. And I was rounding out when I froze for me with Johnny Vegas, who we know is a favorite of Spencer. He's got links to Texas. He's looked really good of late. You get him 125 to 1 at the moment with a morning tea time.
Can I touch on those plays really quickly? Can I just say one thing about two of those options? So I think that Harris English number is a very savvy play. I'm going to be adding that also myself. I think that's a great price. Mm-hmm. Taylor Pendrith. I understand that there's that boom or bust nature to him. First round leader market allows that. He is one of the biggest climbers for me in upside versus his safety number. So he's one of those players that if he can put the pieces together, all of a sudden he jumps into a top 25 sort of a player on any given day. If he doesn't, he's outside of the top 100, but that's the kind of targets in a first round leader market. If you're shooting it down the board a little bit, that can really hit if they do. So I like the picks, David. Once I did actually hear them, I will sign off on them for a second time. But I think they're a great place.
I love the rousing endorsement of the plays. That just gives me even more confidence that they're definitely going to hit. Byron, thank you once again for being a last-minute ring-in in the absence of Joel's illness and Sia's shame. I appreciate you for coming on to the show, and your insights are just fantastic all the time. So, Byron, just let us know quickly where we can find you and what you're up to at the moment.
Yep. As always, rotoboard.com, that's where you can find me and Spence doing most of our stuff over there. Back Nine Bits, right over my shoulder over here is my YouTube stop. I'm in the chat with you guys all the time. You can see that. And then just at the Model Maniac on X. That's my home.
Yeah, and look, go and follow him on Twitter. Byron's page is just filled with a wealth of data that you won't get anywhere else. He loves his spreadsheets like nobody else, and there is just data pouring out of that page. So really, really encourage you to jump over there. Do check out in the description as well. There's a brief overview of Deep Dive Golf and what we do over at Win Daily Sports. The guys put on a lot of work putting the page together, and it's looking pretty sick. And the Masters is just around the corner, so it's never been a better time to lock in than right now. So do jump into that page, see what we're all about. Spence, before we wrap off, we did have a question in the chat that I want to address, which was, what's the hat this week?
So I got this hat probably 10 years ago at this point.
Oh, wow.
From an ex-girlfriend's, her mother's boyfriend. He works for Titleist, did some things with golf. And I was told that it was one of the official hats from the California Memorial, amateur tournament that it was, I think David Koch, Memorial. I think that's the backstory to it. I might be butchering the story after 10 years there, but
mean story though, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're, in terms of niche people to give you gifts, the ex-girlfriend's mother's boyfriend is definitely top of the list. But there's only one thing left to do, and that, as always, is sports.
Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.